I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. And there's a person like this in every office. I'm a great judge of character. 10 seconds, that's all I need. And I'll know if we can trust this guy, if we want to hire him, promote him. I'll know if we want to do business with him. Now, didn't you always just want to flip that around and ask that same person if they had any idea about the kind of first impression they were making? It is a complicated business. I meet you, you meet me, we make instant impressions on each other, and while we're evaluating those impressions, we're also watching ourselves and gauging the signals we send out and measuring those responses. What many of us are not aware of is just how self-absorbing this process can be. Well, some people are very aware of it.
One of the first things I always teach my clients is about the point system.
Oh, yeah.
You should never have more than 7 things on. You know, like your earrings count for 2 points, those daisies count for 3 points. But the best thing to do is right before you go out, look in the mirror and turn around real fast. And the first thing that catches your eye, get rid of it.
That's how I got
it. Get rid of it. I mean, I had this thing in my hair before I left, remember? And I pulled it right out, because as soon as I turned, gone.
So, how much do you think about the first impression you make, and how quick are you to judge other people? Here's the truth test. When you have that first encounter, are you thinking about the person you meet? Or are you thinking about you? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. This hour we're joined by Anne Demaret and Valerie White, two psychologists who teach people to understand how these things work. They've written a book called First Impressions, What You Don't Know About How Others See You. And they're joining us from New York. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks.
Hello.
How am I doing so far?
Pretty well, Dick.
Yeah. How long does it really take to make that first impression? You know, you read, it's 3 seconds, it's 8 seconds, it's 30 seconds. What's your guy's sense of that?
I mean, the second we see somebody or meet them, we're starting to form an impression of them. It doesn't take a long time. And I think you can't really say it's 5 seconds or it's 10 minutes. But what we would say is that first meeting is just really critically important.
Is it all physical first time around, though, Anne? I mean, is it just posture, clothing, facial expression?
Well, the example you gave of the guy at the party, he might have made a really great first 10-second impression. Maybe he appeared confident, he had nice body language. But then what you say after that does matter. If he didn't go into his 10-minute lecture on Egyptian art, he might have made a much better impression. So your body language is one of the first things that people notice. It's almost like you're hardwired to see people's emotions initially, whether they seem happy or threatening, confident or not confident. And that will color the way you see them moving forward.
Okay.
But then what you do say does matter a lot.
I'm glad you used the word hardwired, though, because I'm drawn to think that we're so hardwired to make decisions about the people that we see that there's really not a whole lot you can do about it. It's the sort of, you know, I am who I am, you are who you are.
Well, one of the issues is if you know what some of the hard wiring is about and how people can misperceive certain things, you can modify your behavior accordingly. So, for instance, most of us don't know that when we meet somebody new, they're going to take a small bit of what we convey to them, and they're going to make a complete picture of us based on it. So if I look good, they might think I'm intelligent and I'm nice and I'm kind and all of those other things without really checking it out. If I happen to be in a really bad mood that day, they might think I'm just an angry, nasty, lazy person, which might not be accurate at all. So if I know that, then what I would want to try to do is convey as positive of an image of myself as possible.
So they're taking that one little shred of skin, that little piece of DNA, and constructing an entire person out of it, right?
Right. Exactly. And the person that they end up constructing based on that little bit of behavior might not at all accurately represent who you really are.
So you guys do an exercise with corporate executives and other people to get them to think about how the psychological mechanics behind this. And I wonder if you can explain how you do that.
Well, we interact with them in a one-on-one way, and then we ask them how they think they came across. And then we compare what they think their behaviors conveyed, and then we help them to understand how human nature processes that kind of information.
But that means you've got to be kind of nasty, kind of subjective in terms of saying, actually, you know, you don't make a very good impression.
Well, we always point out people's strengths because most people, everyone does something that's positive and appealing. It's just that there's often little blind spots that we're not aware of.
Give me an example of somebody that you've met or someone who you know, displayed a characteristic that's common in our misunderstanding of first impressions. Can you sort of think back to a client that you did this with? I don't need their last name or their phone number, but, you know, an example so we can understand how people make these mistakes.
Well, there's a pattern that's we call male pattern lecturing. That's kind of what you're Egyptian art partygoer was displaying. A lot of people think, especially men, that if they convey a lot of information and inform people, that they're making a great impression because they're adding a lot of value and makes them seem charming, when they don't realize that they're positioning the other person as an audience member and actually alienating them and often boring them. And we see this in social situations and business situations, in everyday encounters, people that strike up conversations on airplanes. It's a really common pattern of talking at. You can also tell lots of long stories so that you feel like it's really fun and engaging, but the other person is really pinned as an audience. So that's a really common faux pas in first impressions.
Is that
you
filling,
feel passionate.
Is that filling space? Is that because somebody's got to talk because silence is the worst thing, or so we think?
I mean, it certainly can play that role. I think most of the time when we see people doing that, it is just as Anne said, it's either because they're really passionate about something and they want to share it, or it's because they want to show what kind of expertise they have and want to try to be impressive, and they think this is a good way of doing it, when actually in that kind of situation a little can go a lot further than too much.
If that's a common mistake that men make in screwing up the first impression, is there a common mistake that women make?
Women sometimes talk more about the minutiae and banalities of life, and they find like it's on top of mind. This is another common faux pas. Whatever's on your mind, like I just came out of this cab and it was late and I'm all absorbed with this minutiae, or I got off the phone with some, you know, complicated customer service issue, and they just start telling people this. And it feels natural. It's on the top of my mind. It's interesting to me. But a lot of times it can be tedious and boring, especially as a very first conversation.
And so,
or often along those same lines, often talking about other people that they know or family members, as if the person they're talking to is equally familiar with them and has the same level of interest.
But when you guys break this down and try to make sense of it as psychologists in what's going on, it seems to me where you end up is that we're way too full of ourselves, that the problem that we can't get over is that we're not really focusing on the other person as much as we mm-hmm. would like to think that we are. Did I get that yeah. part right?
Yeah, yep. Exactly. And we like to think of first impressions as an act of social generosity, you know, fulfilling the other people's needs, and it'll come back to you. So if you really think about what would make that person entertained, feel special, respected, you'll make a much better first impression than if you focus on your own needs and what you want to get.
And you absolutely are right, Dick, that most of us, when we do meet people for the first time, we really are thinking about ourselves. How am I coming across? Does this other person like me, or how do I feel? As opposed to really thinking about how is that other person actually feeling? And shifting that focus can make all the difference in the world in terms of the kind of behavior that you present.
I mean, I think it's reasonable to stand there meeting someone for the first time and wonder whether or not that piece of spinach is really between your teeth as you hear that it might be. But
well, a certain amount of self-monitoring is healthy to think about these things. It's just when you
I know, and especially for guys, right? I have two daughters.
Yeah, look in a mirror, you know, do that.
Food on face, Dad. It's like, what? But you talk about meeting the needs of the other person, there's a part of me that kind of mm-hmm. recoils and goes, that's a little new age. That's a little kind of feel good. And I mean, can you put that in terms that I understand in a first encounter?
Kind of like a a social exchange. You know, what we get out of interactions is just like an economic exchange. And you look for people that make you feel good, that, you know, make you feel appreciated and respected and connected. And people that give you those good feelings are more appealing than people that don't.
And when we talk about meeting other another person's need, for instance, if you go back to somebody who's lecturing, are they really thinking about, gee, I wonder how interesting this is to the other person, or are they thinking about, I want to make sure the other person gets this or hears this from me? So what we're simply talking about is really just a little bit of a shift in focus. So you want to think about this other person that I'm with, or as Anne said, I mean, are they feeling connected to me? Am I making them feel like I'm interested in them, or that I value this meeting time that we're having together?
But that's more of a mindset change, because you certainly don't want to be caught faking that, do you?
No, but it's a shift in focus, and we're just kind of, again, programmed. Most of us are thinking about ourselves most of the time in one way or another. So what we're saying is, if you can shift the focus a little, it doesn't distort who you are as a person. What it does is just alter what the emphasis is in the interaction.
All right. Now, Connection listeners, first impressions, what you don't know about how others see you. With me, the two authors of a book by that name, Anne Demaret and Valerie White. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Love to have you join us. And let's go first to Boston. Sam's on the line. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Dick. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Great to be on your show. Wow, what an honor.
Nice to have you. What's
So I'm applying to medical schools right now, and there is a mandatory interview for all applicants who are considered competitive. And so they have, you know, scads of information about my grades and my, you know, my history, work, school, everything. And then they want to get a sense of who I am as a person.
And applying for school, it's like I got to tell them everything that I know in the first 90 seconds.
And not try to sound psychotic, you know, and nervous. And, you know, there's so many things going through your mind. So at the beginning, what are they – have they already judged me based on my file? Do they, you know, pick up on my initial body language? And at the end of, an hour-long conversation, has, you know, their opinion changed at all? I mean, it's confusing and nerve-wracking.
Well, you put us in an interesting place here, because the first impression, you just sort of made me realize that the first impression also has a lot of bearing, Anne and Valerie, on the setting. If somebody's coming in as a supplicant, as a job applicant, they're not meeting a peer in the hallway for the first time, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
But, Sam, what they want to look for is that you have good social skills, actually, and that you can connect to people. So this is an opportunity for you to show these kinds of skills and abilities. And if you can establish rapport with the person, make them feel comfortable, make them feel that you respect them, and also be able to confidently present yourself, you know, you'll do very well.
And even if they do have some preconceived notions, obviously they have some positive sense of you and will have you interview with them. But this really is your opportunity to shine socially.
We're going to come back after the break and talk a little bit more about whether or not there are some sort of immutable rules here that stick, because I think that's where we're going with this. Sam, good luck in your interviews. Nice to have you on the program. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join us. We're talking about that first impression, understanding how it works, not just the impression that we make of someone else, but the impression that we're making at the same time. Do we even think about it? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
1, 2, 3, 4!
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about that ever so important first impression. And with me, two women who've written a book with that title, Anne Demaret and Valerie White. They're with us from a studio in New York. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. One of the things that the two of you, a point that you make in the book, which was one of those aha moments, is that this whole idea of first impressions really has changed in many ways from the arena of first impressions that our parents had to deal with, or our grandparents had to deal with, Well, you guys explain it. This is a very different world.
That's right, Dick. We used to live in the same place and, you know, marry someone that lived down the street and worked with people that we knew all our lives, and we rarely had to make a first impression. I mean, people didn't move very much. Now people move all across the country, across the world. They change partners. They work with different clients. They meet new people literally every day. And so it's much more important that you convey the sense of yourself in that short amount of time, because you don't have your whole lifetime the way you used to.
And in a small town where I'm probably going to know the man or the woman who's going to be my son's grade one teacher long before they go to that school, does that make it easier for people in a smaller fishbowl than say for people like you are in New York and banging into new folks all the time?
Well, it certainly makes it easier in the sense that you have much more information to go on. You have many more opportunities to interact with somebody and really come across as you truly are. When you are constantly meeting new people and have to make a good or the right impression real quickly, there's a lot more obviously weighing on that and a lot more that goes into it.
I want to tell you about a guy called Mr. Rowcliffe, who I grew up next to. He wore a dirty white undershirt and drank too much beer and worked at the local factory. And I don't think Jim Rowcliffe ever thought for a minute about the impression that he made on people, the first or the second or the third impression. And I was thinking about Jim Rowcliffe last night when I was looking at the book. And I want to come back to something that we were on, because I just don't know how much of what we project is our nature, is our gut, is something that we're really unable to change. I mean, I don't know if the superficial stuff like the way I dress myself or my posture or something deeper than that, which really I can't get at. No coach is going to be able to alter for me.
Well, with Mr. Rowcliffe, he may not have cared about what impression he made, but if he wanted to, this is learnable. That's why it's called social skills. And people can change. They can be trained. And if they're motivated to, it is something you can actually change, not just about the way you present yourself, but you can say, well, I want to be someone that projects more interest in other people. That's the kind of person I'd like to be more of. And I can do that by changing my behavior, asking more questions, not segueing things back to myself. So these are changeable.
And part of what it is actually stopping and thinking about, well, what do you want to convey about yourself? Who are you as a person, and what do you hope will actually come across? And I think most of us don't necessarily stop to really consider that.
Can we do that, though? Can you look in a mirror or a sort of psychological mirror and say, who am I? What do I want to convey? Aren't those kind of metaphysical questions which are beyond the eye to figure out? Someone else is going to...
No. You can break that down. Mm-hmm. You can think about it. In fact, we break it down into what kind of social gifts do I want to bring to people? Do I want to be someone that's connecting, or do I want to be someone that's only informing? And really think about what kind of person you want to be socially.
Give me examples of those two things, connecting and forming. I'm not sure that I'm with you.
Well, so in other words, look, do you think of yourself, Dick, as somebody who is an easy person for other people to relate to? You're somebody who makes other people feel comfortable. Connected is a good word there. Or the informative. You're somebody who knows a lot. You can share a lot of information about the world. Do you want to come across as somebody who's entertaining? Any of those general kinds of things. I mean, that's not difficult for people to say, you know, as I think about myself, mm-hmm. It's important to me that I make other people feel comfortable in my presence. Or I hope other people think that I'm fun to be with.
But what's the danger at some point, though, that you create mm-hmm. a whole bunch of people who end every conversation with a breezy, have a nice day, and it, you know, they end up not really projecting who they are, but an image of someone who they think they would like to project themselves as. That's a little over the top, but you get what I mean?
Yeah, well, we don't advocate. We don't have do's and don'ts in the book, like do this and don't do this. It's more like going through this exercise of figuring out what kind of person you really feel yourself to be, and making sure that if you don't want to be a have a nice day kind of person, you don't want to say that. You
right.
know, you might be a little more cynical and be really comfortable with that.
And it's being aware of what the different behaviors convey, which many people are not. And I think one thing we want to kind of correct for people is that what we see more of the time is that people actually don't necessarily come across conveying what they hope to convey or how they really see themselves as people. So we find that when we work with business people, I mean, all of us have blind spots in certain areas. You know, Anne was mentioning somebody earlier, or I work with somebody who just comes across as really intolerant and harsh when it comes to other people who are not as smart as mm-hmm. he is. That's not who he is as a person. It's just he has this gut reaction to stupid things people might say, and it shows on his face.
Right.
He doesn't mean to register that and to make other people feel uncomfortable, but that's what he does. So now that he's aware that he's doing it, he can stop conveying that kind of image. So he's actually been coming across in a way that he's never meant to come across as.
Let's go back to our phone lines to Raleigh, North Carolina. No pressure, Roger, but you're about to make a first impression. Are you ready to go?
I'm pretty ready.
Okay.
How am I doing so far?
Perfect. What's on your mind?
But anyway, when I was in school, I took a Dale Carnegie course in the hopes of improving memory skills and everything. And then when I got into the class, I actually learned that it was more of a public relations, speech giving, first impression type thing. And ever since that course, 30 years ago, when somebody walks up to me and makes an outstanding first impression with the firm handshake, the look in the eyes, and remember my name, I'm always suspect of just how much genuineness there is involved in this. I'm not getting a first impression at all. I'm getting a summa cum laude graduate of Dale Carnegie.
Oh, you see, Anne and Valerie, you're creating monsters all over the world. But it's an interesting point that Roger makes, because
that it can seem slick and
yeah, you're wondering how genuine it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why it takes more than 8 seconds, because this person might really be genuine and nice and outgoing and interested in you, or you might find out that the person really has an agenda and is, you know, not presenting himself very sincerely.
You're wondering then, Roger, if somebody wants to sell you something?
Our salesman is your best friend within 5 seconds, and he definitely mm-hmm. has an agenda.
Yeah.
And it's mm-hmm. I feel it's kind of like almost a handicap for me, because I'm wondering how learned it is and how little information I'm actually getting. So it's I feel it as a flaw in
it. May be more aggressive.
And I think actually, Roger, you're bringing up a good point. I mean, certainly sales people and people with very specific agendas, they know or inherently have an idea of some of what we talk about in the book. And obviously this can be used if you know how people respond to certain kinds of behaviors, you can use them in a manipulative kind of way. What we find, though, with most people we work with, whether it is in business settings or social ones, is most people just are really not aware so much of the different signals that they're sending and of the different impressions that people have of them based on certain behaviors that they're doing. And we really want to educate people about that so that they can make sure the impression that others have of them is exactly the one that they want other people to have.
So it
can be misused.
Mm-hmm. What are you two then watching for if you get this firm handshake, look you in the eye, you're my best friend, first impression? What's the next clue to sort of see what's beyond that 8-second presentation? I think in part that's what Roger's asking. I'm curious as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's many different aspects of a first impression that we outline in the book about how, you know, approachable, how much they show interest. For example, how much they self-disclose, how much they match. He may not be matching to you, and that might be something that might be uncomfortable. Well, in terms of your intensity, how quickly you speak, how loudly you speak, if someone comes on too strong and doesn't adapt to you, mm-hmm. it can make you feel uncomfortable, and it can change the whole dynamic of it. And he may have a inflexible, dynamic, strong, aggressive approach that's going to put people off. And you may feel uncomfortable with someone that can't adapt to your style. Just like there's hardwired things. If people match you, for example, if they speak at the same speed of speech that you like, then they're going to assume you have a whole cluster of positive qualities, and they're going to project them onto you. And so that's why it's a really good thing for someone to be sensitive to other people, adapt that. That shows real genuine connection and interest.
And also we would be looking for, is this somebody who doesn't just try to pull everything out of us, but Ann had mentioned earlier, do they share something of themselves as well? You can also take a look at the context and the situation you're talking about. I mean, if you are going to buy a used car, of course you're going to be a little more wary of some of these behaviors than if you were just meeting someone that a friend is introducing, for instance, for the first time.
Okay, good point. 1-800-423-8255. Next to Louisville, Kentucky. And Nick's joining us. Nick, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I have to agree with your guest today. I mean, I own an executive search firm. I deal with degreed, educated professionals, and I prepare them for my clients for interviews and presenting themselves and making these first impressions. And I think the whole thing about, mirroring or matching, as they describe it, the person that you're meeting with, you're having the first impression on, it's so important. It's not so much about being insincere and, you know, the handshake and the look in the eyes and you know, that you're insincere. I mean, the people that you need to be sincere, and I guess you can, if you're feeling like you're sincere, the person that you're going to be speaking with and making that impression is going to feel it as well.
But, Nick, if the people that you're talking to are both educated and professional, are you struck sometimes by what they may not know about the way that they project themselves?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm amazed all the time at how I'm dealing with very highly intelligent, very educated professionals, but their social skills are so lacking that a lot of times they don't get the better jobs. They're not being paid what somebody who has better social skills and maybe isn't as technically as good as they are is getting the better jobs.
Hang on for just half a second, if you would, Nick. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. So give us an example, Nick, just of like the biggest, stupidest flaw that you see on a most reoccurring basis. We all want to listen and find out if it's us.
Well, I think most people, as your guest said earlier, they focus on themselves. When you're actually, you know, in the context of interviewing for a job, or really any context, you should show interest in the individual, you know, asking questions. You know, I don't know that there's necessarily bad questions. There's just better ways to do things. There's not necessarily a bad question. There's just a right time. You know, people that get in an interview, a lot of times they will try to get the job right off the bat when maybe it's a 3 or 4 step process. They're focusing more on concerns, compensation, benefits, how many hours they're going to work right up front before they have the opportunity to find out what's important to the person that is conducting the interview, what their needs are. Because if you're being interviewed, they already feel, based upon your resume, that you have a skill set. So
let me, if I can, turn this to Ann and to Valerie, because a little bit earlier in the program, you guys were using the words focus. And I find, I mean, Nick's reminding me of just how hard it can be. Say you are trying to get a job. You're aware that the impression that you're making is an important part of that selection process. And so you're thinking about it. And in thinking about it, you're changing it as you're projecting it. And I wonder if there's a kind of a destructive spiral that goes on there where you become too self-absorbed with, you know, should I put my left hand on my right knee? Should I cross my legs? Is my pant, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, I think Nick has a good point. A lot of people don't interview as well as they should. And you can, again, learn these skills. You can practice. You know, if you have to remember all these things simultaneously, it's really hard. And we really try to get people to focus on just changing one thing, two things at a time, and practicing them until they feel natural. And so it might seem like, oh, my God, there's 100 things I need to think about. And you're right. You won't be able to manage them all well. But if you practice, practice responding to your answers, practice your body language, you can make tremendous improvements and you can project your real skills.
But even if you take this to a cocktail party situation, mm-hmm. You know, there what you're saying is pay attention to what the person is saying And yet you're in a room with 30 other people and you're looking over someone else's shoulder and you're wondering if the person who you were supposed to meet there is that, you know what I mean? There are all these things which, whether you're in a job interview or in a mm-hmm. social setting, that are pulling you in the opposite direction, that are saying to you, no, don't focus. You got all this other stuff going on.
Well, you there can be a lot of other distractions and everything else. But I think a key thing, again, is just being responsive to the person or the people that you're with. And so if you are at a party and you know you're waiting for a friend to come and you're looking around, let the other people know, say, I'm expecting my friend, so I'm going to keep an eye out for them. You know, now they know you're looking away, not because you think there's someone more attractive standing in the other corner, but because you actually have another purpose that doesn't have to do with them. And I think when you are in an interview setting, as Anne said, you can certainly practice a lot of the behaviors that will make for a good impression. And then it's just, are you responsive to the person that you're with? Are you noticing how they are or not reacting to you? And as needed, sometimes modifying your approach accordingly.
And just to follow up on Valerie's point, remember you have many, many qualities that are charming and positive, and you don't have to change everything. And you should remember what you do that is positive and charming and be confident in that. And so really you don't need to be monitoring everything about yourself in order to make a positive impression. You should relax and be confident in your strengths.
Okay, think about all this, but then relax.
Just think about, if you really want to tweak the way you present yourself, it's really helpful to think about one thing at a time.
Okay.
And try them out. It doesn't matter who you're meeting. Go to the store and talk to somebody who's waiting online. I mean, try these in everyday interactions. And like anything else, the more you practice them, the more they become habit and more natural and easier to do.
All right. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, how much do you concentrate on that first impression, or how quick are you to judge the person that you're meeting for the first time? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My two guests this hour, Anne Demaray and Valerie White, they are psychologists who have written a book called First Impressions, What You Don't Know About How Others See You. And there's a subtitle there, Wouldn't You Like to Know What People Are Thinking About You? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Maybe you wouldn't like to know what people are thinking about you. Let's find out from Mitch, who's calling in from Durham, North Carolina. Mitch.
Yeah, fascinating topic. It's something I've thought about for a long time, and I'm just curious for the two authors of the book. When I was a child, between the time I was born and the time I was 7 years old, we moved five times. And just for my father's business purposes, it wasn't a military situation. And so I was forced to, re-socialize myself five times in 7 years at a very young age. And I'm curious to know, to put it shortly, like I have this, it seems to me, innate ability to connect with people almost instantaneously, whether it's a cocktail party or an interview. And I've never had to practice those things. And I'm sure there are things that I could improve on. But I'm curious to know if the two authors think that there might be some sort of connection there, that maybe I learned something without knowing that I was learning it, so to speak. In so far as being able to have those type of interactions relatively quickly with virtually anyone.
Just stay with me for a minute, Mitch. Let's hear from Anne and Valerie.
Mitch, I absolutely think that you did. And you were someone, I think probably not everybody could have adapted as well, but you learned obviously pretty quickly what you needed to do to be able to form friends quickly. And you had, fortunately or unfortunately, lots of opportunities to try that. So absolutely, I'm sure that experience had a real positive bearing on your being able to do that sort of effortlessly now.
Is it like learning a language where actually if it happens when you're very, very young, it's easier for you to make the kind of adaptation that Mitch did rather than you know, trying to get at it when you're 50 years old?
Yeah, certainly early childhood experiences will play a big role if you come from a big family, if you moved around a lot. And Mitch probably had a lot of opportunities to try, you know, meeting people in different ways, noticing their reactions and making note of it. And if he's socially perceptive, as he seems to be, he would learn that quickly. And so he got more opportunities to practice. And the earlier, the better, yeah.
And it is one of those things, you know, we were talking earlier, even something like a math ability, right? And some people just have much stronger abilities that way. It's easier for them and comes more naturally. The same is true with some of this. Some people, and whether it's through just experiences or who they are as people, just are innately better at understanding other people and you know, being able to connect with them and form relationships more quickly. But other people can develop these skills, and it is a matter of knowing what to do and what the impact is of different behaviors, and then just practicing them and seeing what kind of reactions you get.
Are you aware of it, Mitch?
I've certainly had discussions, especially with, you know, it's fairly often I run into people who say that they've moved around a lot and they tend to be military children. They've lived in Europe or in Asia or all over the United States, and they seem to have different types of skills than what I have. I mean, it's certainly something that I've thought about, and it's why I'm so fascinated with this program and will be buying this book probably this afternoon. But it's something that definitely came into my consciousness because people pointed it out to me. They said, how is it that you can walk into a room and find anyone in the room, no matter who they are, how shy they are, or what they do, or where they are, or anything like that, and instantly be able to have a conversation with them.
Okay, but when you step into that room, Mitch, I guess what I'm wondering is, at that moment, are you aware of it, or do you just sort of go on autopilot or instinct at that point?
I think it's a combination of the two things. If I go into a room and don't know anyone in the entire room, then there's definitely some sort of subset of my consciousness that's aware of, like, okay, I don't know anyone here. And I look for those visual clues, like you were talking about. Do I put my right hand on my left knee? Do I grab my ear? Do I pick my nose? Whatever, in order to get attention. And then I sort of look for those visual clues that would be similar to the things that I would do, and sort of locate a person that I would be able to talk to. And as I'm sure that the two authors know, as soon as you meet one person in a room, that person knows usually two or three other people in the room, and the next thing you know, you've bounced entirely through the room.
Sure. Right. Sounds like Mitch is really good at approaching people, and he's also very perceptive of who is approachable and able to take that initiative to go up to people, and that's something that a lot of people are not confident, comfortable, or skilled at doing.
And that approachability, which we talk about, we have seven, what we've divided into seven fundamentals of a first impression. The approachability one is the first one, and it really is critical. I mean, one of, as we had been talking about hardwiring earlier, one of the things that people are really programmed to sort of have an immediate gut reaction to is whether or not somebody seems at all threatening to them. So
you guys,
if someone
give...
seems...
Excuse me for interrupting, but you give a great example of that in the book. You talk about standing on a street corner, maybe I'm kind of projecting here, but realizing you're lost and then looking for someone who's going to give you directions, and that of those people on the street, you think, no, I can't go up to them, and other people on the street, you go, I could get directions from that person.
Right.
And I just wonder if you can put your finger on what it is, because in many ways that's like the pointy end of the first impression. Complete strangers,
right.
Not like somebody you're ever going to form a lasting relationship with, and yet you're responding to something.
Right. Like Valerie was saying, we respond to emotional cues most quickly. So we immediately scan the environment. We look for people that seem threatening, and then we're like really uncomfortable with them. And then we look for people that seem friendly and have a nice, warm demeanor about them. And that kind of stuff is registered really quickly at a really basic level. So it's body language mostly that communicates that. Is the person making eye contact? Is their head up? Do they seem like they have an open posture or are they closed up?
And if they're similar, I mean, do they look similar to us somehow? That's often very comforting, too. Who seems safe? What are those safe signals?
Are those questions of age and race and
no,
economic,
you know? All of that, yeah. I mean, that's completely independent. Whether you have a scowl on your face or you're smiling communicates a real lot, no matter what your demographic is.
So when you talk about matching, you're not saying, I'm looking for a middle-aged white guy. I'm looking for someone who I can get that imperceptible whatever with, right?
Well, it can be if you are a middle-aged white guy, it might be that all other things being equal, you might be more comfortable asking directions from another middle-aged white guy. But when we were talking about matching in other ways, we're talking about things like rates of speech, amount of personal disclosure you're doing, that type of thing.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Let's take our next call from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hannah's joining us. Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
So?
Thank you for taking my call.
Nice to have you on the program. What are you thinking?
It seems to me that the person that you're face-to-face with also is making an impression, which adds to the complexity of the situation. And if it's a male and female, it seems to me that women have a dichotomy going on of preconceived idea of what it is to be feminine or a woman and what it is to be assertive and take care of yourself. And I was wondering if that was addressed in Valerie and Anne's book.
All right, just before we go any further with it, Hannah, I want you to try and give me a better picture of the encounter. Is this someone that you're meeting for the first time, say, a friend of a friend? Is this not necessarily sexual politics we're talking about? It's just boy-girl, right?
Or it may be an interview.
Okay.
Anyway, it would be a male-female thing, and the agenda that goes into both the interviewer and the interviewee, even in a social context. Seems to me women have this odd balance.
Right. Actually, we've found some research that supports that most people, if they come across as having a balance of being masculine and feminine, being, for example, for women, feminine, but also independent and confident, that it makes a better impression. And you're right. Sometimes people try to stick too much to this stereotype or this conception of what they think will be appealing, not realizing having a nice balance of gender traits is even more appealing. And that goes for men, too.
Right. And we do, Hannah, address it in the book that way. But it's also interesting because other studies have found even if it's just platonic kind of friendships or a platonic situation between a male and a female, it does change the nature of the interaction. Both men and women will act a little differently. It's more important to them to try to impress the person of the opposite sex more than they might try to impress somebody of the same sex.
I want to come back to you, Hannah, with mm-hmm. with a male perspective on the female perspective that you're bringing, because I find myself in a similar situation sometimes, you know, where it's I guess what I'm saying is that I think guys have the same problem or the mm-hmm. same dichotomy in different circumstances, you know, do I project this part of my personality or that part of my personality? I'm wondering.
Really, that's interesting. I bet they do. I didn't think mm-hmm. about that.
Do you want to share some of your...
Actually, yeah, I have several things that I'd like to get off my chest. No, but it's coming back to what you two were talking about earlier in the program in matching, because one of the mm-hmm. things I wanted to ask you about is sometimes professionally, but sometimes personally, I'll find myself imitating the accent of somebody that mm-hmm. I'm talking to or their speech pattern. And I'm thinking to myself, Is this rude? Is this weird? Are they going to listen to that and go, yuck, or should I just go with it? Do you know what I mean?
It's actually a sign of social skill. It means that you're really perceptive, you're tuned into them, you're naturally matching. It's almost effortless, and you're probably making the other person feel really comfortable the way when you interact with them in that way.
And especially you're talking about doing this. I've noticed that I will do that sometimes with people's accents. It is a spontaneous kind of a thing. And people are generally pretty good, car salesmen notwithstanding, at picking up if somebody is being genuine or not with them.
For all those car salesmen who are listening to us.
And we don't talk about them at all in the book. So.
Right. But they can call in if they want to.
I'm interested, though, when you're coaching people on this, if you'll ever just say to somebody, you know, you should really begin by saying, "Hi, my name's Dick. I make a really bad first impression, but if you can stay with me for a couple of minutes, I think we really get along." I mean, how
actually,
upfront about it should you be instead of pretending it's all subtle and we're not talking about it?
If you know that you tend to have a certain style when you first meet someone that isn't the real you, if someone knows that they tend to be a little bit shy, they can give someone a heads up and say, "Hey, when I meet people for the first time, I'm often a little bit quiet. It's not the real me. You know, I hope you'll understand. And when I get to know you better, I'll be a lot more open."
And it's not. And they're acknowledging by doing that they recognize this about themselves. It isn't who they are. But also, you know, we all tend to really personalize things. So if I meet somebody for the first time and they're not very responsive to me, I'm probably going to be thinking, well, what am I doing? Why aren't they responding to me? And so if someone tells me, look, I can be a little shy, I'm a little quiet the first time, I'm also going to feel better because I'm going to know that their behavior is not because of something that I'm doing or not doing.
So we do get to break the code. We get to talk about this instead of just tiptoeing around it.
And if you feel like halfway through or towards the end you realize you've kind of made a gaffe or you've been talking nonstop, it doesn't hurt to acknowledge it and say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I've been just running off at the mouth. I'm, you know, let's hear some more about you and what do you think about X or Y?" And you can turn it around if you catch it in its tracks.
That part I'm going to remember. Anne and Valerie, I want to thank you very much for being with me on the program today.
Thanks
a lot, Dick.
Thanks.
Anne DeMaray and Valerie White are psychologists and co-authors of a new book. It's called First Impressions, What You Don't Know About How Others See You. Our program is produced by Catherine Fenollosa, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Tara Murphy is our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you. And the way you look tonight, yes, you're lovely with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft, there is nothing for me but to love.